It's a great day to get healthy with Which Way Is Life, the podcast designed to help you find a healthier, inspired life. Episode number 33, my guest today, author Holly Brown. How to recognize adult bullying, how to know if you are a bully, maybe you are and you don't know it, and what to do if you are bullied. And if I could ask a favor, quick hit the subscribe button wherever you listen to catch every episode. And if you could, rate and review the podcast on iTunes. That would give us a chance to help more people. Which Way Is Life is brought to you by Audible.com. Get a free audiobook download and 30-day free trial at audibletrial.com/whichwayislife. Over 180,000 titles to choose from for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 player. Which Way Is Life is also brought to you by Real Salt. You get all the minerals, all the flavor, and all the benefits of sea salt. That's real, Real Salt brand sea salt.
Which Way Is Life? Your roadmap to a healthier, inspired life. Bill talks with trendsetting doctors, fitness gurus, life coaches, celebrities, athletes, and other interesting experts to help you find the life you want to live. Get inspired. Get healthy. Reconnect with life. Here's Bill Klaproth.
Very happy to have Holly Brown on with us today. Holly is a San Francisco-based author and marriage and family therapist. Her blog, Bonding Time, is featured on PsychCentral.com, a mental health website with 1.5 million visitors per month. She is also a novelist whose psychological thrillers include Don't Try to Find Me and A Necessary End. In her latest psychological thriller, This Is Not Over, two women clash after a house rental gone wrong in an escalating war of words that leads to a shocking conclusion. And today we're going to talk with Holly about adult bullying, which is a small undercurrent in her new book. Holly, so happy to have you on today. Can you first off quickly share with us a little bit about your personal life? Who are you when you're not saving the world?
Well, you covered it that I'm a marriage and family therapist, and I'm practicing in the San Francisco Bay Area, and I'm married with a five-year-old, and so the topic of bullying, I think, you know, with kids is kind of what you typically think of, and so I think how that kind of persists through life is kind of something of interest to me and what I'm looking forward to talking to you today,
Me too, because you don't really hear a lot about adult bullying, so I'm interested to get into that. But first, I like to start the show with the one thing. Are you ready?
Yes, I'm ready.
Can you quickly share with us one thing someone can do to improve their life today?
I think the best thing you can do every day is approach the world with kindness and compassion and sort of think about how to connect with other people and how to extend that to other people and to yourself.
If we all presented ourselves with love, kindness, and compassion, just by doing that, we would make a better world right away. So I love that answer. Very cool. Holly, you say adult bullying can damage important relationships, professional connections, friendships, self-esteem, and even earning potential. And it can be quite common. So what's going on here? Is it that the teenage bully grows up but doesn't grow out of the bullying behavior?
In a sense, I think so. I mean, I think that why bullying seems normal in child in a way is that we sort of expect that kids are figuring out social hierarchies, they're figuring out where they fit in, they don't always make the best choices, they can be impulsive. I mean, I even think in childhood you sort of read that book, Lord of the Flies, and there's a sense that the kids are kind of fighting it out and figuring it out. And then we're supposed to basically outgrow bullying, and adults are supposed to know better. But what I think is that ultimately, like, bullying is one person projecting his or her insecurity onto someone else, and that's a destructive coping mechanism that can last into adulthood. It's just not recognized as such. I think typically adults don't think of themselves as being bullies or engaging in bullying behavior. They just think of it like, I don't like that person and I don't need to hide it. But I think that it is sort of a way to get power over other people and to feel better about yourself, and that's the thing that I think persists from childhood on.
Holly, that's interesting how you said that. Adults are supposed to know better. Yeah, as you age, you think, oh, I'm not a bully, or, you know, I'm grown out of that, or how could I possibly be bullying? But you say adult bullying has three main ingredients, which is intolerance of differences, the denigration of others to boost one's self-esteem, which you just said, and shutting down of our own innate empathy to do so. So on the flip side of this, some people may be adult bullies and may not identify their behavior, as bad. So what are the signs and how can someone self-diagnose their bullying behavior?
Yeah, so I think of the most common behaviors as being kind of rumor-mongering in your social circle. Another one is subtly controlling or undermining other people with critical or demeaning comments, talking behind a colleague's back in a way that harms their credibility or their relationships and makes it harder for them to get ahead. I think a corollary to that is sort of political backstabbing in the office, so you're kind of subtly questioning other people's competence or performance. And then I think one that's actually one of the most painful and invalidating is ostracism, which is when you're basically giving people the cold shoulder, and it's like a way of saying that you don't even exist to me. And I think that that's one that people definitely underestimate in terms of its power and its negative impact on other people, and often don't think of that as bullying because they're like, I just didn't want to talk to that person, so I didn't. But that I think that that sense that they're not even a person kind of worthy of recognition, I think is a really painful thing.
So if you're a bully and you're treating people that way, you're not going to be getting the love back. I mean, your relationships are going to suffer. So is that point the adult bully says, boy, what's going on here? Every relationship I have or the people around me don't want to associate with me. Maybe it's me. I mean, is that how you eventually self-diagnose a bully would self-diagnose their behavior by the wake of bad relationships around them?
Possibly. I think that in terms of the bullying, it's often targeted towards just one person or a few people in their lives, and so other relationships might be undamaged. I think part of the awareness I'm trying to bring around the adult bullying is to say that even if it's not impacting you, it's important that it's impacting others. And I think in a way that goes back to when you asked me sort of what people can do to make the world better. I think that especially right now in the world that we're living in, like what you're putting out there and the way that you're treating each and every person, I think is significant and I think has a ripple effect. And so I think even if you don't feel intense personal consequences, recognizing that what you're doing sort of pollutes the world in a sense, and it pollutes the world that if, especially if you're a parent, you're thinking about how that world is going to be for your children and what you're modeling for your children and then how they're going to learn to treat their peers, right, by seeing how you're treating everybody else. So I think of it as like you may or may not feel those personal consequences. It's often easier to change when you feel the personal consequences, but it's important to bring awareness even if you're not, just looking around and saying, how am I treating the people in my orbit at work and in my social world and just the people that I'm coming across?
Okay, so that awareness is very important. So somebody does self-diagnose or says, boy, I am acting like a bully with this person. Why is that? What can the bully do then to stop that behavior or change that behavior?
I think the part of the recognition is that it's not just about how you feel about another person, because we all have a right to our own preferences and to decide, you know, who we like better and who we'd rather be talking to. So I think it's not about saying that we don't get to have preferences in the world, but I think it's about what you do with dislike. It's about if you don't connect with another person, it's about your willingness to cause them harm because you dislike them. And so once you sort of realize, oh, that's what I'm doing, I'm trying to let them know I don't like them, or I'm trying to take something away from them, in part maybe because I'm projecting my own insecurities, in part because maybe they're making me realize something I don't like about myself, that once you sort of realize that, that you have to think about better ways to release your negative feelings, like other ways that you vent your negative feelings that are more private and not harmful to other people. So there could be writing in a journal, or if you're really angry, you scream into a pillow, or you talk through your feelings with someone else. And so the idea is to basically release whatever sort of vitriol is happening for you, not unleashing that onto another person.
Which is important. And you say, I like how you put that, you know, when you're bullying, if you're self-diagnosing, the willingness to do someone else harm, and you're basically letting them know that you don't like them. So is part of this then this negativity towards that other person, you've really kind of, you got to let that go, right? And then try to also increase compassion. I mean, that would help too?
I think of it that way, that sort of an antidote to that is increased compassion. I think there's also recognizing what the real target of your anger is. It could be that you're really actually deep down angry with yourself, and then you need to be kinder to yourself or figure out what needs to change in your life. I think also in my novel, In This Is Not Over, I think that my characters Miranda and Dawn there are things that they're trying to avoid facing in their own lives. They're trying to avoid facing what and who they're truly angry with, and then that allows them to project onto each other. And I think that's a very common dynamic in terms of bullying, is that you need a safe target, in a way, because the people who are maybe closest to you, the people that you're that maybe truly angry with, or even the person that you're angry with, if that's yourself, that rather than turning it inward or turning it towards people who you have to live with, you're kind of turning it outward and you're trying to kind of get it out of yourself in a way. But that it's still not really an acceptable way to behave in the world, I think, you know, at least not if we think in terms of the larger picture of the world that we want to create and live in and have, you know, succeeding generations live in, then it's not really an okay thing to do with those feelings, which are normal human feelings.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's not the feelings that are bad, it's the expression of the feelings.
You're so right, because the bully probably had been bullied early on, right? Or that's generally true. Somebody that is a bully probably was bullied, and they probably have a lot of negative self-talk going on. So they have a lot of inward turmoil going on, and that manifests itself sometimes towards another person. Is that right?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I think that sometimes it's people who were bullied themselves. Sometimes it's people who were abused in their families. And so they go on to figure out what kind of, in a way, they maybe think of the world as sort of bullies and victims, like as people with power and people without power. And they might decide they want to identify with people who have power and not feel powerless anymore. And so I think that people can come to it in different ways. I also think that there's a certain way that it's in the culture that encourages more bullying. So it might be people who, I think this is definitely true with social media, where you see kind of the trolling that happens, and you see kind of these, like the internet troll who tries to almost like catch an unsuspecting victim and demean and humiliate them. And they're in the comment sections of various websites and articles and blogs and online forums. And I think then that meanness can be contagious, and the internet can act like a sort of cyber dog pile or kind of like a lynch mob. And I think just sometimes the culture, I think, around the election, I think that the culture moved meaner in a sense, you know, where it became more and more acceptable to be mean. And so I think some of the things are kind of innate, well, not necessarily innate, I should say, because they're not inborn, but maybe that you took them in throughout a painful childhood and through various traumas. But I think some of it is also what we breathe in, and that's why I go back to the idea of thinking of wanting clean air, you know, thinking about kind of the way you want the world to operate and then behave according to that, because I think that there is a certain contagion to meanness that we need to be aware of.
I think you're so right. Social media has just amped a lot of this stuff up, and especially with our current divisive politics right now. In fact, you say social media fuels the dehumanizing effect by distancing us from the pain caused by our actions. And when you're in one of those horrible threads on Facebook, you're right. It's easy to type some really nasty stuff, where if you were right in front of the person, you wouldn't do that. So when you talk about dehumanizing on social media, I think you're totally right on.
Right. You don't see faces. I mean, I think one of the biggest things that creates empathy, and this is actually an inborn innate thing, is that is looking at other people's faces, you know, and seeing what's going on and mirroring other people's faces and seeing that they're sad or that what's going on there. And I think that and also hearing voices, I think, creates empathy, too. When you hear people's tone, it sort of reminds you, this is a person here. And there's a way that people can lose sight that there's an actual person who's sitting across there, like, taking in what you're saying to them. And because you don't hear the voice, because you don't see the face. And so I think it's sort of incumbent upon us to remind ourselves, there's an actual person who is ingesting what I am spewing here. And would I want that? Do I really want that deep down? You know, because it's just too easy to join in, I think.
Just like you said at the beginning, show up and with kindness and compassion. And if we did that on social media, it would be a much better experience for all of us. And as you were talking, too, I was thinking about self-diagnosing bullying behavior. I imagine people could come to the bully, too, and say, you know, why are you treating that person badly? If they're unable to self-diagnose, somebody coming and saying, boy, you really treat that person badly. Why are you so mean to her or him? And that could be another way that you could go, what do you mean? And that starts that awareness where you can start that inward look into, gosh, maybe I am treating that person badly. Why am I doing this? And if you're on the other side, then if you encounter an adult bully, what should you do?
I think it depends, again, on the situation. I think that if you're just sort of out and about and someone just screams something at you on the street or something, I don't know if there would be any advantage to engaging in that. And then it's just the showing them that they're not getting a rise out of you, I think sometimes is good advice, that bullies like to pick targets who give them a lot back, you know, in the form of seeming upset by what's happening. And so you take some of their power away by you know, looking like, I don't even care that you just did that. So I think... sometimes I think it's a trial and error, you know, that I think it's like you can start with saying, like, if I ignore this, does the behavior continue or does it stop? And if it stops, then that's great. You achieved, you know, the effect that you were looking for. I think that if that's not working for you, then it's like figuring out, how do I take it up a notch in terms of confronting somebody in a way that is respectful of them still? Because, again, I don't think that you're trying to match them, you know, that you're wanting it to be this, like, and then it's just an escalation. And so I think it's figuring out what the nature of the relationship is, what the situation is, how public it is, how, you know, what your connections are with people. But I do think that in some cases the ignoring is a good thing, and in some cases confrontation in, again, an empathetic and compassionate way is a good thing. But it's figuring out how to protect yourself and how to make sure that you're not allowing your self-esteem to be compromised.
So there's a lot of different factors, and that makes sense, and very complex at times. But so a potential strategy, if you feel you are being bullied by somebody, is, you know, maybe try ignoring. And if that doesn't work, then employ some of the strategies that you talked about earlier about confronting that person kindly and compassionately and discussing it. So that could be a good strategy then if you feel you are getting bullied.
Yeah, sometimes it's about figuring out, or at least trying to read the signs about, is this other person kind of an unwitting, unknowing bully, or is it intentional behavior? Because I think that there are people who are consciously, intentionally trying to harm other people, but I actually think, especially among adults, I think that's rarer. I think that the sort of lack of awareness and doing things that are harmful to another person without necessarily realizing them or acknowledging them even to yourself, I think that's actually more common. And so that's why sometimes just ignoring wouldn't necessarily help in that situation, because they already don't know. So the confrontation is about presuming that this person, if they did know, would want to change their behavior.
Right. And I think you brought up a good point there about not necessarily being deliberate, because you even said just by constantly giving somebody a cold shoulder could be a form of bullying, and I never thought about it that way. Or rumor mongering, or talking behind a colleague's back, those are examples of potential bullying that you wouldn't think of the classic bullying case, but if you do that to somebody, that is a sign of bullying.
Right. You're hurting their reputation. You're hurting their relationships potentially with other people. I mean, it could be that you're really hurting your own relationships, because it could be that whoever you're talking to is actually thinking negatively about you for the fact that you're spreading rumors, or the fact that you're being so unkind to another person. So you might be backfiring on you anyway, but if it's not backfiring on you, it could be causing harm to other people. I think it's about thinking about the kind of person that you really want to be. Because even if you don't like another person, do you really want to be the kind of person who deliberately tries to harm them? You know. So I think it's about thinking about, again, what you want to put out into the world, what impact you want to have, positive or negative, in the world.
Totally agree. And that comes from that awareness again. What type of person do I want to present to the world? So those are really good tips and indications and strategies. Well, coming up, we get the high five from Holly Brown. And if I could ask a quick favor, I have one simple goal for this podcast. So after you listen to the interview with Holly, if you could jump on over to iTunes and rate and review the podcast. It takes about 30 seconds. And by doing that, we gain a wider audience. So after the interview with Holly, jump over to iTunes, rate and review the show. That would help Which Way Is Life greatly, and I certainly would appreciate it. The High Five with Holly is next. Which Way Is Life is brought to you by Audible.com. And just for listening to Which Way Is Life, Audible is offering a free audiobook download with a free 30-day trial to give you the opportunity to check it out. So if you like listening to podcasts like this one, you're going to love Audible.com. So I would recommend you check it out and browse all the books you can download for free with a 30-day trial. Just go to audibletrial.com/ and then type in Which Way Is Life. Again, that's audibletrial.com/ Which Way Is Life for your free audio book. Which Way Is Life is also brought to you by Real Salt. Now, you probably already use sea salt on your food because you know of its health benefits, but is your salt real? Take a look at the ingredients panel. You might be surprised by what's inside. A lot of salts contain fillers, anti-caking chemicals, even dextrose, which is a type of sugar. So you want a salt like Real Salt that hasn't been stripped of its minerals or had chemicals added. Real Salt. You get all the minerals, all the flavor, and all the benefits of sea salt. That's real. Real Salt brand sea salt. Find it at your local health food store or go to realsalt.com. Time for the high five with my guest today, Holly Brown. Holly, are you ready?
Yes, ready.
Question number one, how can we find greater happiness and fulfillment in our own lives today?
I think a lot of what we've talked about in this conversation is self-awareness, because I believe that like change comes from awareness. And I think intention is also very important. So thinking about whether you're approaching your life with sort of the intention that you mean to, you know, if you're having the impact on the world that you mean to. So I think that self-awareness and intention kind of go together.
Self-awareness and intention. That's very good. All right. Question number two, and you mentioned it before with our current election. These are anxiety-provoking times. Any tips or strategies on how to deal with the uncertainty of all this stuff that's going on?
I think it is a difficult question. I think that it's figuring out for yourself whether you want to tune in more or you need to tune out more. Because I think there's a lot of noise and there's a lot of negativity, but I think there's also sort of a lot of positivity to be found. So I think it's figuring out for yourself, do you want to be more engaged? I know a lot of people are, you know, we're getting out there, obviously, you know, in terms of the march and are turning more towards, have sort of more of an activist bent, and they're deciding that that's the right direction. Other people are sort of feeling saturated in terms of, like, social media, and so I would see some people who were saying, I'm signing off for a while because I realize that this is just overwhelming. So I think figuring out what feels energizing to you and whether you need more engagement, more disengagement, and that's a shifting thing. I think that's in flux, and so I think it's sort of checking in with yourself to figure out whether you need to be more aware and doing more, or whether you need to be doing less in that sphere and just turning inward more towards family and friends and other sort of productive activities. So I think it's like that sort of constant checking in with yourself about how you're doing with what you're taking in and what you're putting out in the world.
I think that's good advice. If it's becoming overwhelming, check out for a while. It's easy to do. Shut off the TV. And like you say, just reconnect with family and friends more. I think that's good advice. All right, question number three. As a therapist, is there one thing you see that people struggle with the most that could be easily fixed?
I think that I'm a generalist, so I see a wide variety of issues. I think that in terms of something that could maybe not be easily fixed, but could be sort of definitely worked on, would be people having trouble being kind of present in their own lives, you know, that they're kind of half engaged or like a quarter engaged or an eighth engaged in a lot of different things and feeling overwhelmed. And so one thing, and I don't think it's actually an easy thing to do, but I think maybe more of a simple thing, is to get back to a place where you're asking yourself what you really value and what you're really prioritizing, and thinking about whether the way you use your time is actually in line with your values and your priorities.
I love that. So how to be more present in your life, or work on being more present in your life. I think that a lot of us have that problem. So I love that answer. Question number four, do you have a favorite quote or a book you can share with the audience?
A book I love, and I think this is in my mind right now, actually, because I'm a real tennis fan and I'm watching a lot of the Australian Open right now. And mm-hmm. I love the book Open by Andre Agassi, and because I think it's a memoir that's about a lot more than tennis, and it's beautifully written. And I think it kind of has a lot to say about the way choices are made for us, and that he was playing tennis from very young, and it was his father's desire for him. And then he lived that out for a long time, and then now he's much more of a philanthropist, and he runs schools, and he's very engaged with children, and it's a nonprofit, and I kind of think the idea of how to find your own path, and how to sort of find contentment and satisfaction, and as opposed to sort of following like a predetermined path from someone else, I think is really valuable, and so I really love that book.
And we'll put a link to that book on the show notes page at RadioMD.com. And question number five, Holly, finish this sentence. Throughout my life, the most important thing I've learned is?
That sitting in judgment can temporarily feel really good, but is very damaging. And being open and accepting of other people and compassionate is going to take you a lot further.
I love that answer. Don't sit in judgment on someone else. That's really good. Well, thank you for sharing that with us. And Holly, how can we connect with you?
So I have an author page on Facebook. So it's just you do Holly Brown author, you will find me. And I also have my own personal website, which is hollybrownbooks.com. And I have my blog on Psych Central, and it's called Bonding Time. So you can find me all of those places.
Fantastic, and we're going to put links to all of those sites right on Holly's show notes page at RadioMD.com, and make sure you check out her latest book, This Is Not Over. Holly, thank you so much for being on with us, and I close out every show with one of my own favorite quotes, which is, enjoy the little things in life, because one day you will look back and realize they were the big things. Holly, thank you again for your time today.
Oh, it was really fun. Thanks so much.
And I want to thank you for listening. You're here with me on this podcast. I hope you're getting something out of it. And I just want to thank you for your time and being here with me on this podcast journey. And again, if I could ask a favor, just a short one, 30 seconds, jump over to iTunes, rate and review the podcast. Let me know what you think. Give me a star rating. And by doing that, we gain more visibility and it gives us a chance to help more people. So if you could just do that for me, jump over to iTunes, I would greatly appreciate it. Which Way Is Life is produced by RadioMD.com, award-winning health podcasts. I'd also like to thank my producer, Pamela Moore. I'm Bill Klaproth. You can find me at Which Way Is Life on Twitter. Make sure you follow me there and on Facebook. You can also check out the show notes at RadioMD.com for all of my episodes. Thanks for listening and stay well.